Tonight we'll be speaking about outbursts of anger, really looking at how emotion drives our speech. James says, no one can tame the tongue. And when we're talking about talking, we have to realize where that talking comes from. Jesus says, but the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. For out of the heart come evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, slanders. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. And so when we're talking about speech today, always remember that whatever speech we're talking about is going to be influenced by our heart. And we'll get more into that. Now there are some sins of the tongue that are deliberate. We could talk about slander, gossip, false teaching, things like that. But some things are hard to control, like a quick reaction spurred by anger. Paul tells the Galatians, now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger. It's that idea of how emotion drives our speech. And it's not like, well, I love my wife so much that finally my emotions come forth and I say, I love you. But how emotions drive the rash speech. Something boils up within us and it boils out and we speak rashly with our lips. And so really, when I'm talking about these outbursts of anger, I'm taking that term from Galatians, but really it's the emotionally driven rash speech. James also says, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. Now look how he puts speech and anger together. Slow to speak, slow to anger. The anger of man, he's concentrating on anger there, but speech is in there. With anger within us, with anger in our heart, it's hard to hear. And with anger in our heart, it's hard to control our tongue. The proverb writer says, he who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. I try to remember that. In every meeting I'm in, when I'm talking to somebody, Alan, even a fool, don't think you're wise if you just keep silent. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent. But look at this. He who restrains his words has knowledge. But look at this. It's paired with what? He who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Right there in the middle of speech is the cool spirit. You see? Anger drives the rash lips, and it's hard to control that tongue with anger. But when we have a cool heart, when we have a better heart, then we can better control our tongue. Just as an example of how speech may drive our tongue, look at the case here. Now, with Jacob, Leah had already bore Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. And in verse 1 of chapter 30, it says, now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, give me children or else I die. Then Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? Now think about that. I can just hear Jacob's frustration. Okay? Now this doesn't mean that Jacob sinned. It just means that whatever he said was arising from the emotion in his heart. Okay? Anger burned. And because of that anger burn, he let something loose. That may have been true. But I'm just pointing to an example here of how our speech, a little neutral example, if you will, of how our speech is affected by our heart. So before we get into these outbursts of anger, let's look first to see God's view of anger. We've seen how He looks at speech or rash speech. No one can control the tongue. James 1:20, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. The proverb writer says, he who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. And obviously we've got to go to James 3. No one can tame the tongue, as I mentioned before. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. And so I would like to look here at some examples in the scriptures of this emotional outburst. Speech that has been affected by the wrong heart. A bitter heart, an angry heart. So first I'd like to look at Eliab. Remember we talked about David? How did David kill Goliath? And we mentioned Eliab before. Now remember, the Israelites were fighting the Philistines, and David was back home tending the sheep, and his father sent him to go check on his three brothers that were serving under Saul. And so David goes to check on his brothers. And in the meantime, for 40 days, Goliath, the champion of the Philistines, come down and taunts, according to David, this is how he sees it, taunts the armies of the living God, sends them a challenge. Send me a champion and let us fight. We'll see who's going to win. Okay? And he does this morning and evening for 40 days. And then while David is there, he's talking with some folks, and then he hears Goliath's challenge, and he begins to ask, hey, why is this guy doing this? Why hasn't somebody done this? What's going to happen to the person who takes care of this guy? And he's talking with some fellows, and Eliab, if you look at this, Eliab in verse 28 of 1 Samuel 17, his oldest brother heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger burned against David, and he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle. Now we're going to talk about this in just in a moment. I'm sure all of us, since no one can control the tongue, tame the tongue, all of us have had experiences of problems with the tongue. And here are some problems that we have with our tongue. Things that sting, things that your loved ones hit. Your anger, your speech may be rough, but there are some thorns that just really prick, that pick you up. Has your wife told you that? Has your husband told you that? You said this. But when these words really stand out. Think about this. Isn't this how we talk? Why have you left those few sheep? Few. I don't know how many sheep they had, but what was Eliab's point, though? Why would you want to specify, even if you got a few sheep, to say you got a few sheep? Meaning, I'm a soldier in this army, I'm in battle, I've got my gear on, and what are you doing? You're back there tending sheep. And not only are you just tending sheep, you're tending few sheep. Your job, your existence, is minuscule compared to me. And Eliab is saying this because of his anger burned against David. Why have you left those few sheep? And then he says, I know your insolence and wickedness of heart. Now wait a minute. And that's what David said. I'm just asking questions, bro. But you meant to do that. I know what you mean. And we start imputing motives against those that we have an anger against, don't we? Oh, you're insolent. You're wicked. I know what you've done. You've come down in order to see the battle. Now, his father had sent David to go check on his brothers and deliver a gift to the brother's commander. But you just come down here to stick your nose in my business. Come down to see the battle, to see what the adults are doing. So Eliab's words were driven by anger. And I wonder, was it what David did that made him angry? And we're going to talk about this in a moment when we get to another example. But what Eliab was not doing. Eliab was not dealing with Goliath. And here's David thinking he's going to take care of what I should be doing when I'm not doing. That really riles me. And sometimes I think that's the case in where we see our deficiencies, we see our weaknesses, and we see somebody else is strong where we are weak. And we get jealous, we get bitter. Why am I not? We're kind of angry at ourselves. I think perhaps maybe Eliab's angry with himself, and he's shooting that out, conveying that anger out to David. Just as his anger burned. So I think it's most likely building on the case of that natural sibling rivalry, the family rivalry that we have, you know. And I think that what David was doing just touched it off. We can ask ourselves, have we engaged in things like that? I know I have. Paul tells the Ephesians in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 29, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Think about that. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. According to the need of the moment. Eliab wasn't really reacting to the need of the moment. It wasn't like, David, you're right. We need to do something about this Goliath. It was probably shame of himself, and also, this is my younger brother, the sheep herder, the shepherd, coming around inquiring about this Goliath. Next we have Saul in 1 Samuel chapter 20. Now in this case you may remember, Saul is trying to kill David, and David is trying to convince Jonathan that his father, Jonathan is Saul's son, he's trying to convince Jonathan that yes, your father Saul is trying to kill me, and Jonathan says, no, it can't be. And so they hatch this arrangement. Remember that I'm going to go hide, and you talk to your father, and then we're going to shoot the arrow, and there's a thing with the arrow, and then you're going to give me a message that way. And so there's a feast, and David, that Saul is putting on, and everybody's invited, and of course the feast is more than just one day, it seems like it's lasting a few days. But a feast commences, and Saul notices David's absence. He doesn't think there's anything David must have a good reason not to be there. But then the second night, Saul notices David's absence again, and he asks Jonathan about it, and Jonathan explains, telling a lie, I guess, and he's got to go sacrifice. That's why he's not here. And then in verse 30, Saul's anger. Now remember, Saul's been angry ever since David killed Goliath. Jealous. Because David killed Goliath, not Saul. Saul's anger burned against Jonathan, and he said to him, you son of a perverse, rebellious woman. Do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? And so Saul wants to kill David, and Saul even hurls a spear at his own son. So Saul's anger is demonstrated not only by his words, but also him wanting to at least have Jonathan perceive that he wants him dead. Chunks a spear at him. But notice this, Saul's speech is like Eliab's speech. You're insolent, you're wicked, you just come to look at the battle. You've left those few sheep. Now what does Saul say? Really the only attack that Saul makes of Jonathan could be something that he could have said in a regular tone of voice. You're choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness. Don't you know that? But wait a minute. What did he say before that? You son of a perverse, rebellious woman. Now wait a minute. What's David's what's Jonathan's mother got to do with this? But isn't that what anger in our heart does with our speech? It doesn't make sense. I don't know the character of Jonathan's mother. Maybe she was a perverse and rebellious woman. But what does that have to do with what Jonathan's asking or defending with David? I want to attack you, but I don't want to just attack you. I'm mad at you. I'm mad at the world, and everybody's going to know I'm angry. I'm attacking your mother too. That's what he's saying. You son of a perverse and rebellious woman. So anger doesn't think rationally. Anger attacks in all directions. And that's what I keep on thinking. I keep clicking thinking I'm having these slides for these verses, but I don't. I want to kind of keep these up here. But that's what James is saying in James chapter 3. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. We're looking to burn down the whole forest. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members is that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. And the proverb writer says, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. I'm jabbing, and I really don't care who gets stabbed. I'm just mad, and I want the world to know about it. And I'll pull anybody into this argument if I feel like it. Then we have, lastly, the example that I want to bring is Balaam, but this is a longer example, a few points I want to bring in here. Not so much words instigated by anger, but how anger instigated a reaction that led to a remarkable conversation, if you know the story of Balaam. Alright, so the Israelites are camped in the plains of Moab. They haven't conquered Israel yet. They're between Egypt and the land of Canaan. And we have Balak, the king of Moab, was kind of scared of the Israelites, and so he was wanting to hire Balaam to prophesy against the Israelites. Balaam said, after Balak sent messengers to him, said, I'm not going to curse the Israelites for you. The messengers reported back, and then Balak sent more distinguished messengers to Balaam. Balaam refused, but said he would ask God. And so he goes to ask God, and God says, all right, go ahead. But in Numbers 22, verse 22, it says, God was angry that he went. Now, wait a minute. God said, I can go, but God said that he was angry that he went. So, we have to do some reading between the lines, and maybe by the whole story, into the story, we know why maybe God was angry. I think Balaam was kind of pushing his luck with God. Balaam wanted to go. God didn't want him to go, and it's kind of like God allowing Balaam to go to dig his own grave. Seemed like that's the case. And we get this starting off at the beginning of the story here in verse 22. God was angry. Now, remember this idea as he's going along, Balaam is on his donkey, and an angel with the sword appears in front of the donkey. And the donkey runs off into a field. And then Balaam strikes the donkey. And then the angel appears again, and this time the donkey rams Balaam's leg up against the wall and crushes his leg. And he strikes the donkey again. And then the angel appeared again where the donkey had nowhere to turn. And we find ourselves in verse 27 of Numbers 22. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. So Balaam was angry. Now this is going back to our heart again. Angry. And struck the donkey with his stick. And the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have struck me these three times? Then Balaam said to the donkey, because you have made a mockery of me. If there had been a sword in my hand, I would have killed you by now. The donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life to this day? Have I ever been accustomed to do so to you? And he said, no. And then after this conversation, that's when Balaam saw the angel and realized what was going on. So I'd like to look at two things here. Number one, we may often find that our outbursts are a result of doing, of not doing what we were, of doing something we're not supposed to be doing. Right? A lot of times we get in trouble because we're doing something we're not supposed to be doing. And in this conversation, it's revealed that Balaam's past relationship or experience with the donkey should have let him know something was up. But something was blinding his eyes, his heart, to that past experience with the donkey. So first of all, we may often find that our outbursts are a result of doing what we're not supposed to have been doing. What about Balaam here? Think of the frame of mind that he was in. He was angry with his donkey. Think about the mindset to you're carrying on a conversation. Now it's one thing to say, you say something and the donkey says something back and you say something real quickly and then all of a sudden you realize, wait a minute, I'm talking to a donkey. I can understand that first sentence, first word, but this is like this is a conversation going on. I mean, donkey says something, he says something, the donkey says something, he says something. The anger just makes our mind lose all rationality. Isn't that what anger does? So it demonstrates the power of anger over rationality and how our conversation, our words, our speech is affected by what is in our heart. Now, let's look at a deeper, look more deeply into Balaam here. Balak tried at least three times over a course of hours or days, and it seems like it would be days because he would curse them and then they'd have to go someplace else and build an altar there or something and then curse again and then go someplace else. It seemed like this took more than a day to do all this. So over a period of time, Balak has been trying to curse or put into a position to curse, not Balak, Balaam. Balak is trying to curse the Israelites, but Balaam is in a position to curse the Israelites three times, and all three times he's going to say, he told Balak, whatever God says, I'm going to say, and this God says it, and ends up blessing Israel. So it seems like Balaam is a righteous man, but as we read further in the scriptures, Balaam is not as righteous as he seems in this story. We get that, as I said, in verse 22, in chapter 22, when it says that God was angry that he went after telling him that he could go. So something's up. That's kind of like a foreshadowing there of what's going to be happening in the story. You know, if we look at 2 Peter chapter 2, Peter's talking about chapter 2 starting at verse 14. Peter talks about those having eyes full of adultery that never ceased from sin, enticing unstable souls, having a heart trained in greed, accursed children, forsaking the right way. They have gone astray, having fallen the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. But he received a rebuke for his transgression from a mute donkey, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. Jude says, woe to them, for they have gone the way of Cain, and for pay they have rushed headlong into the error of Balaam and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So he's preaching something, but he's reaching back and looking at those Old Testament examples of what he's preaching against. And one of those is Balaam. So it seems like Balaam was a pretty greedy guy. We get that because Balak was the guy that was keep on trying to bribe him, saying, I want to pay you all this. And Balaam says, well, even if you pay me such and such. And I think that kind of right there is a hint telling him how much it would be. I remember someone, a professor of mine, talking about Abraham. Abraham, when he's buying the cave of Machpelah, I believe, to bury Sarah in. And he's talking with the people there. And, of course, he's trying to buy it, and the person says, no. I just give it to you. And Abraham says, no, I got to pay for it. No, I just give it to you. No, no. And the guy says, well, what's a cave worth $100? So he gives off some value there. And then that kind of, that's like a hint to Abraham saying, okay, I'll measure out this is how much I'll pay him. I wonder if that's what Balaam was doing there when he says, even if he paid me this much, I wouldn't do it. Okay. That kind of like drops a hint. That's the payment. And maybe it was. I don't know. But that's something to think about. But it says that Balaam, the son of Beor, he loved the wages of unrighteousness. And it says they rushed headlong into the error of Balaam. And so it seems like Balaam was kind of greedy. He was after that thing that Balak was trying to pay. And maybe that's why God was angry. Because God, can I please go? I mean, that's a lot of money. He didn't say that. May have to read the lines. I don't want to put anything into the Holy Spirit's mouth. But given the other scriptures, something like that seems like it's going on. Balaam was also immoral. Now later on, this is chapter 22, later on Israel comes back and destroys Midian. They attack and kill everybody in Midian. In Numbers 31, verse 8, it says, they killed the kings of Midian along with the rest of their slain, Evi and Rechem and Zur and Hur and Reba, the five kings of Midian. They also killed Balaam, the son of Beor, with a sword. Now why in the world would you want to kill Balaam? He already prophesied favorably, blessed Israel so many times. And then in verse 16, same chapter, behold, these caused the sons of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. So the plague was among the congregation of the Lord. So remember that? We talked about that. What story was that in? That was also how David defeated Goliath. Abhorring what is evil, clinging to what is good. And we have that story of the Israelites committing harlotry with the Midianites and the Moabites. And Moses commands that the leaders and the men who committed this harlotry be killed. And there's a guy that brought a Midianite woman into the camp, and it was Phinehas that drove the spear, and God gave him a covenant of peace, and the plague was stopped, where 24,000 were killed. That's what he's talking about there. And in looking at the whole passage, Moses said to them, have you spared all the women? Behold, these caused the sons of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to trespass against the Lord in the matter of Peor. So the plague was stopped. So how do we get to that point in Numbers 25 for committing harlotry? Balaam. Balaam couldn't curse Israel. He could only say what God put in his mouth. But he could influence the Israelites to commit harlotry with the Moabites. This is the type of person that Balaam is. He was greedy and instigated fornication among the people. So it's this type of person that gets so angry and loses his mind so that he has a conversation with a donkey. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to be doing in the first place. So think about our outburst of anger. Were we in our right frame of mind? Had we been praying? Had we been reading the scriptures? Had we been devoted to a life of good works and serving others? Or is it more likely we get so involved in work, we get so involved in... I'm in a golf beat now, but I tell you, driving from Texarkana to Malvern, the meeting doesn't exist. These two trucks side by side exist to me. That's my world. Okay? And sometimes we get so involved in the world, we forget about everything else. That's the problem. We need to be more engaged in our seeking of those things that are above. So, Balaam was angry and struck the donkey with a stick. So what drove Balaam to this point? That donkey may have been the straw that broke the camel's back. But what led him to that? He was not following God. Think about Saul being angry at Jonathan. wanting to even throw a spear at Jonathan, wanting to kill David. And that rash speech that came from his mouth, why was that? What brought Saul to that point? Not following God. What drove Eliab to be angry with David to cause him to speak evil of David? Now, I'm not saying that Eliab was out of fellowship with God or Eliab was some type of heathen sinner or something like that. But I do know that Eliab was not doing what he was supposed to be doing, and that was, you were supposed to be fighting Goliath. He was not doing what he was supposed to be doing. And so when anger burst out from us, we can ask, what were we doing? What's my life like that leads me up to this point to where my speech is not always seasoned with salt? It's not unwholesome. It's not wholesome. They're unwholesome words. It doesn't give grace to those who hear. And second, looking at Balaam's relationship with his donkey, taking a preacher's license here, you know how some preachers, they'll take a story and they'll bend it and rip it and try to get something, a story out of it that's not there? I think it's here. This is a jumping point. Jumping off point, anyway. But think about this. Balaam's relationship with his donkey, not that he had an intimate relationship or friends or anything, but the idea is, the donkey says, or asks, am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life to this day? Have I ever been accustomed to do so to you? And Balaam says, nope. He doesn't stop to think, hey, there's a donkey to me. He says, no, I'm going to answer you. No, you've been a pretty good donkey all this time. Well, this is the first time something happened and all you do is beat me. The second time something happened, I've never done that either. Here it is the second time on the same day doing it, you're beating me again. And here it is another time, you're beating me again. Something doesn't click with you, Balaam? Something's wrong with your donkey? You realize that I don't do these things, right? Yeah. Well, you should be asking questions. Why is my donkey doing this? You see. Anyway, I'd like to take that little jumping, use that little platform there to jump off and ask ourselves, do we mistreat those that we have a good relationship with? Or should have a good relationship with? In other words, it's not like some guy is coming to pester you every day, and you got some words prepared for this particular fellow. Or like those, now trucks are there. They're out there. They're just waiting. Allen's on the highway. Everybody get out. Just put 100 trucks right there in front of him. You know. But we have brothers and sisters and children and parents, spouses that we love and we live in harmony with. And then all of a sudden, because something's in our heart, boom, out comes that word that hurts. The unwholesome word that hurts. The ungracious word that hurts. James says in 3:9, talking about the tongue, going back to that verse passage again, with it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. Now think about the hurtful words that I've used against my fellow human beings who are made in the likeness of God just as I am. I'm not superior to them. In James chapter 4, verse 11, he says specifically, do not speak against one another, brethren. It's one thing to just speak to everybody in general, made in the image of God. We are special. Do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. And that applies to our family and friends. We may think our attack is justified. And what happens is we start piling on to each other's words. Anything you say, I could interpret it another way, but instead I'm going to interpret it as an attack. And as a defense, what's the best defense? Good offense. You think you're going to, boom. I'm going to land you one. And then, well, they're not as dumb as you think. They're just as smart as you about the old offense-defense thing. They're going to want an offense too. And it just starts building, 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 building. And you have a big old fire. So what's our response here? A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. There's wrath. Now what do I want to do with that? Do I want to make more wrath between both of us? Do I want to stir this pot? Keep on getting it hotter? And I want a gentle answer. For lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. This is really, I think, talking about maybe gossip here, but I think the application is the same. For lack of wood, the fire goes out. Even a wise man, when he keeps silent, even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered a wise man. If there is no speech, there is no argument. And so sometimes, whatever you found in your relationships as husband and wife, as you grow smarter perhaps, or sometimes if you just grow tired of fighting, just don't say anything. Just let it lie. It's best to just absorb the attack. And it could be that, think about this. Have you ever said something and immediately within a half a second wished that you did not say it? Wished that the person who you said it to didn't hear it? Well, that's happened this past week with me, Young. I'd say something, I'd go, okay, good. She didn't take that the wrong way, which is the way I intended, but she didn't take it the way I intended. Good, because I shouldn't have intended it that way. Same thing happens to somebody else. Somebody else says something, and it could very well be that, oh no. And you don't want to say anything, because when you say anything, then you're making a mountain out of a molehill, kind of like. If there's a little molehill, and I don't want to say, look at that molehill, and make a big special thing out of the molehill I just put out there, then it may become a mountain because you're, what do you mean by that? And it kind of grows. We know the spousal argumentation here. Or sibling argumentation. So when somebody says something, it may be a good idea to say, well, maybe they didn't mean it that way. Try to put it in the best light as possible. And as the proverb writer here says, the beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it breaks out. Just stop it. Little water comes out, stop it. In 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 7, this isn't talking about speech, it's talking about, you know, lawsuits with brethren. But the idea is, even if you feel wrong, Paul's saying, why not just be wronged? Why not just be defrauded? If somebody says something bad to you, just, okay, I'll absorb it. I won't deflect it and throw it back at you. The proverb writer says, a man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression. Not adding wood to the fire. Again, Matthew says, but the things that proceed out of the mouth come from the heart, and those defile the man. For his mouth speaks from that which fills his heart. And all these things, we're talking about speech, but the speech, the words that come out of our mouth are coming from our heart. And so the words that are coming out of our mouth are just indicative of the bitterness or the jealousy or the anger or whatever bad emotion we have in our heart. So the lesson in all this is, yes, we need to kind of control the tongue, but the best way to control our tongue is to control the heart. Be doing what we're supposed to be doing. Nurturing what we're supposed to be nurturing. And hopefully that gracious speech that Paul directs us to have will come forth naturally. In closing, I read this before, but this is one of my favorite scriptures. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. That's something. If you think about all the heroic soldiers, the brave men who have done such wonderful, amazing feats of valentry, he who is slow to anger is better than them. He who rules his spirit than he who captures a city. That person right there will be one that will better be able to not tame the tongue, but control the tongue. So to have that good heart, we need to have a right standing before God, and so the invitation is yours. If you need help in that right standing, you can seek help now as we stand and as we sing. There.